This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. As a radiology nurse, Stephanie Pickett saw staggering health disparities. Over 90% of the people she saw with kidney failure were black. She was bewildered by this racial gap and decided to take action to address it. Today, she's a professor of nursing at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and she conducts research into the beliefs that people have about their bodies and how that relates to their health. And Stephanie Pickett is with me now. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Tell us when you first started noticing these disparities.
Okay, well, I spent many years in the operating room, and for 2 years I decided to leave the operating room and work in vascular radiology. And I noticed that the people coming in for vascular studies who had a diagnosis of renal failure were predominantly African Americans. And I noticed it because, I'm not sure if I noticed it because they look like me or they look like my family members, or I know that renal failure, the two major causes of renal failure is diabetes and hypertension. And I know that these two things are preventable. And nurses are interested in preventing. So I think I became really interested in wanting to do something about what I was seeing.
How much research was there on this? Because I know there has been a fair amount, at least in very recently, about these disparities. What was available to you at that time?
Well, some of the literature was very clear that African Americans are three times as likely to have renal failure. Three times as likely. So that was known. So the numbers were there. And other people were doing things about it as well. But I thought, as a nurse, that that I wanted to enter in and to see what I can do.
What did you decide to do?
So I decided to go back to school and become a nurse practitioner. I started working in an inner city clinic where most of my patients were African American, and a large number of them were hypertensive. At the same time, I started a screening at the local bus station, where I was able to meet a lot of African Americans, and I took along a set of nursing students. So we were able to screen people, and screening is important because hypertension is known to be a silent killer, and you really don't necessarily recognize that something is wrong until something is wrong. So we were able to screen a number of people, and I was able to treat some of them in the clinic.
Well, screening and diagnosis is one thing, and then there's compliance, because there are things you can do just in terms of the way you're living your life, some of the choices you make, that can reduce some of this or the effect. So what did you do next in terms of education?
Okay, so in terms of education, before that, I became a part of a research team that was doing work in the community on stroke awareness. So that was my first exposure to research in the community. So I became interested, I liked it, so I eventually went back to school and obtained my PhD in nursing science and began to develop a program of research of my own.
What kind of things were you looking into?
I started looking into beliefs that African Americans have about their illness, in particular those who have high blood pressure. So my first study, I examined beliefs about hypertension and associated those beliefs with self-care behaviors.
So what did you find?
What came up to the top of the list of beliefs about causes, many African Americans believed that the cause of their hypertension was stress, whether it be stress from overwork, stress from family problems, stress associated with emotions. So yes, that is primarily what I found. And then that was associated with not keeping doctor appointments. So it that belief was associated with a self-care behavior that was not consistent with health.
So the more likely I am to believe that my hypertension, which I've diagnosed, I know that, right? You've told me that, I get it. And I think it's, look, if I tell you what's going on with my family, you'll know why I've got hypertension. Those folks are less likely to keep their doctor's appointment.
That's what my study says.
All right, so what first of all, what do you think is going on there? I mean, it's something, you know, does it mean it's untreatable because it's my family? Or why is that correlation true?
That's what I found in this population, and then I also found it in, stress. African-American women believe that stress is a major cause of their weight issues as well.
Mm. But stress is a yes. factor or is not a factor?
It is a factor. But it doesn't, it is a factor, but there are other factors as well. And when those factors prevent you from actually doing the things that we know help, like going to the doctor or taking your medication or watching your diet, that is an issue. So implications from this study indicate that providers should inquire of their patients about what they believe about their illnesses, and then have a conversation with them about what is true or what medical science believes, and then try to understand where they're coming from as well.
And then the next step would be to add these other factors, because it sounds like people have a partial understanding, but not a complete understanding.
Correct, yes.
So what have you found then? Because it's not easy to change people's beliefs, even if you, that's the thing about a belief, isn't it? Once you've got it in your head, it's pretty hard to get somebody to convince you otherwise. What's the next step?
Okay, so we haven't actually focused on changing beliefs. We have really focused on the stress per se aspect of it. And one study, we looked at perceived stress and emotions and eating behaviors, and we found that there was no real correlation between perceived stress and weight. And we found that potentially because of the design of the study. We are now looking at a biological measure of stress, which is cortisol in hair.
Yeah, just tell us about that test.
And okay, the premise is that cortisol is a hormone and you can extract it from hair. So the premise is that hair grows about 1 centimeter per month. So we take 3 centimeters of hair and we take it from a special area on the scalp, and then we send it off to be analyzed. Okay, so that measure is defined as a chronic measure because it's over 3 months. And we compare that to emotions, we compare that to eating behaviors, and then we compare it to weight.
How would you imagine then this taking place, or how do you imagine it working? Once we've taken these factors in, now the providers are doing what you say, they're having the larger conversation. What's the exchange, and how do you think it would play out?
Okay, so the exchange would be particularly if a person has high blood pressure or excess weight, and you would really ask them what they believe about their weight and about their hypertension. And then you would assess, and then you again would give them what medical science says. Now, you cannot, as you said, you cannot make people believe what you want them to believe, but you can have the conversation.
Right. So once you've got these other factors and you say, look, diet is also implicated in this. Stress is probably an important part. It may also be related to your eating habits, we don't know, But we need to address the diet, nutrition, and perhaps exercise.
Yes,
I'm throwing
yes.
that in. And that's going to be a part of this, so there's something you can do. It's not all outside of your control.
Correct, yes. One thing that hasn't been done in the past, and that's pretty much the start of my work, is actually asking about the beliefs, because many of these people know that diet and exercise is something that they are supposed to be doing. But sometimes their beliefs override that. So bringing that to the forefront and just asking them.
Yeah. And it does seem that you're also, at the very least, encouraging practitioners and providers to have a longer conversation, to spend more time with their patients, getting to know them. If you talk about beliefs, you might begin to ask why and where did that come from? And then you can talk about your parents and your grandparents and bring that into the conversation. Is that any part of this?
That is possible, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Let me ask you something about the bigger, because it's certainly important for people to understand what they can do. And it seems to me that that's what you are committed to doing, and what you went back to school twice, my count, nurse practitioner, then the PhD,
yeah.
to do the research to allow for these better practices now, hopefully to be employed in the clinics and the examining rooms. And that's good. I now know, and you've helped me understand that my beliefs were too narrow, and a broader belief can change what I do, because I've got control over that. So between me and you, it's terrific. The broader public who's also listening to this conversation, there's this question of social determinants of health, things that in fact are outside of our control, and particularly for minority populations who have undergone social stress. Is there a danger that you're doing the right thing, but if a broader public gets a hold of this, they're saying, you see, it's, you know, you just fix the way you're living your life and that's it. We, these social determinants are not important. Is there a risk that we could let ourselves off the hook and not address some of these, or do you think social determinants are not anything we should think about?
When you talk about social determinants, you're talking about mainly social economic status, where we live, where we recreate, and where we work, right?
Right.
So those things are important. We know that they're important. And of course, one person can't do it all. So we have to broaden our interventions to be more comprehensive. We need to talk about neighborhood changes. We need to talk about making sure that people who want to work, have a job, have resources, all of these things play into health. And one doctor, one provider, and patient can't do it all, because there are external things influencing.
Right. So, and your work is focusing on that part that is in your control.
Correct.
And that's been a missing link. So it's very important work. So what's next? Where's your research taking you?
Well, we're looking at interventions that may impact eating behaviors and may impact stress that impacts eating behaviors. So that is gonna be the next step.
Now, is that take you outside of beliefs? Now you're looking at actual interventions.
Right, it's taking me outside of beliefs at this point.
All right, well, thank you so much for your work. Stephanie Pickett, professor of nursing at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Stephanie, thank you so much. You can find out more about her work and everything we do at our website, stateofthings.org. By the way, film adaptation of The Wizard of Oz turns 80 this year. So how old does that make you? You think about that. Movies on the Radio is celebrating with a full hour of this iconic film. We want to know what experience you've had with that. And a lot of us have seen it and have fond memories, some horrifying memories, who knows. Tell us what your experience of watching The Wizard of Oz is. We want to hear some personal stories. Movies on the Radio celebrating a full hour with The Wizard of Oz. And you can get in touch with us by email, sot@wunc.org, or you can tweet at the show at #SOTMovie and be part of the show. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hullab-Moorman. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wadarski and Jenny Lawson engineered the show today as well. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio. Once again, the music of Greensboro-based singer-songwriter Dave Ray Cecil. Dave.
I met a man who taught me his rules. Said if I could drive, I never would lose. Now I'm running these back roads on time. With each tick on, the clock means a dime. It don't matter that they say I'm wanted to find. When across that borderline, running that shine, running. Sheriff's got my plates, breaking his laws, it's me he does hate. Sets up them roadblocks day after day. Vows he will catch me, but I'm miles away. And I'm running these back roads on time. With each tick on, the clock means a dime. It don't matter that they say I'm wanted to find. When across that borderline, running that shine. Late one night came the fight, sheriff on my tail. 125 per hour, him and